Hello, and welcome to Albuquerque Theatre Guild's weekly podcast. I'm Mike Miller, and I'm your host. Join us every week right here, where you'll hear what's happening in performance in Albuquerque. We'll keep a running calendar of shows opening and closing and talk to interesting people involved in entertainment here in Albuquerque. This time, our special guests are Colleen McClure and Joe Feldman from West End Productions to tell us about The Effect by Lucy Prebble. But before we talk to Colleen and Joe, let's take a look at the calendar. Bonnie and Clyde continues at Musical Theatre Southwest Center for Theatre and runs through February 25th, as does Mrs. Warren's Profession 2.0 at the Ox Dog. Almost Maine opened this past Friday and runs through the 25th at the UNM Department of Theatre and Dance. Mary Stewart also opened on the 16th at the Vortex and runs through March 11th. Murder on the High Seas opened this month and continues through March and April at Foul Play Cafe. The Opera Southwest presents 5 performances of Hector Armiento's world premiere opera Bless Me Ultima, based on Rodolfo Anaya's well-known book of the same name, and it opened this past weekend and plays through the 25th at the Hispanic Cultural Center. Baskerville, a Sherlock Holmes mystery, comes to Popejoy on the 23rd for 2 performances. Upcoming auditions include Moon Over Buffalo at the Adobe Theater March 10th and 11th. The Ox Dog will be auditioning for Phyllis Nagy's adaptation of Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter. And they are still accepting auditions for roles in Measure for Measure. Other auditions in March include Steel Magnolias, March 10th and 11th at Albuquerque Little Theatre, and then for the full Monty at ALT on March 24th and 25th. Shows opening in March. As part of their Africurkey concert series, the African American Performing Arts Center presents Tracy Whitney in a tribute to Nancy Wilson, Friday, March 2nd. The Effect at the VSA North 4th, produced by West End Productions. Glengarry Glenn Ross at East Mountain Center for Theater. Art at the Adobe Theater. A Delicate Ship at the Ox Dog. A Chorus Line at Popejoy. Sister Act at Albuquerque Little Theater. Landmark Musicals Ragtime on the Roadie Stage at UNM. And Vernon Poitras' solo performance on The Life of Walt Disney, Wish Upon a Star, plays at the Adobe the end of the month. You're Funny, But You Don't Look Jewish comes to the Jewish Community Center, and Storytellers of New Mexico will host its 3rd annual World Storytelling Day event on March 20th, and A Streetcar Named Desire opens at the Vortex in March. For times, tickets, and or information on any of these events, please revisit the Albuquerque Theatre Guild's website at www.abqtheatre.com. That's abqtheatre.com. And now let's ask Colleen and Joe to join us for this week's podcast. We're talking today with Colleen McClure and Joe Feldman about West End Productions and their upcoming show, The Effect, which we will get to in just a few minutes. Welcome, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on the show today. What we like to do is start off and learn a little bit about you. So at whatever point anybody wants to jump in.
Sure.
Well, can I ask a quick question?
You may. Go right ahead.
I was told I would have a trailer of my own.
You were?
Yeah.
Somebody lied to you.
Okay.
That's just the way it is. If we have to call the whole thing off.
Well, where do we begin? So I was hanging out with Jessica Osborne in a couple of years ago, and we were chatting, and I said, I really want to start a production. I want to start a theatre company. And she said, well, let's do it. And the next thing was that she was on her laptop setting up a box office, internet, my Facebook and a website, and I was just mesmerized because she's amazing at those kind of things, and that's how it began. And it was a little bit impromptu, but it was a lot of fun because I was really excited about directing her in Shirley Valentine because she, to me, it was in her bones, and so that's how it started. And then last year we did four plays, and we did She Stoops to Conquer, Educating Rita, and Abigail's Party. And the main goal is to present plays from across the pond, from the British Isles, England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. And that's what we're trying to do. And trying to do plays that have not really been seen here, or rarely seen here in Albuquerque. So, yes.
How about your background?
Me?
Yes,
oh.
You.
Well,
somebody, one doesn't just pop up and think, I'll start a theater someday. You might have some sort of performance background, I think.
Well, as you can tell from this ridiculous accent, I come from England, although I'm really Irish, which is very confusing to people over here, but you know, I started acting at school like other people, and then I went to college and got my degree in theatre and music. And then from there, I went to, as a, you know, just recently graduated student, I went to the West End to box office and, you know, doing box office for Vaudeville Theatre. And then Michael Codron, who was a producer there in the West End, wanted me up in the offices, and so I went up there for a while, and that was fun and crazy. And then I started getting work in the West End, mainly as an understudy, for Bill Kenwright Productions and places like, and I ended up doing an understudy gig at the Mayfair Theatre for The Business of Murder. I don't know if you remember Richard Todd. He was like one of the first Robin Hoods. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that's how it started, and I just wanted to bring a little bit of that to Albuquerque, and so that's what I'm doing.
Well, when you came to Albuquerque, you were involved in some other things.
Oh, yes. I mean, first of all, I was in Atlanta. I did work with the Atlanta Shakespeare Company and Theatre Gale, and that's how I met this handsome, rugged man, Theatre Gale.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Did you say? Let me clarify for the audience, you're talking about Joe.
Who?
And not me.
Joe Fell. Oh, well, you're handsome too, Michael.
Well, but that's not the point.
No, that's true. So, yeah, I met Joe Feldman in Atlanta, and actually he was, in fact, we might be doing that, this production, a different version, of course, but he was doing Under Milkwood for Theatre Gale, Dylan Thomas, and I auditioned, and that's how we met. And then I was a single parent at the time, and then was it a couple of years later we got married, and then I came over to Albuquerque and did work in, you know, some of the local theatres, the Vortex, the Adobe, the Cell, and so on and so forth, and Oxdog, the lovely Vicky, and then thought, well, no, I want to do some plays that are more challenging for all the Brits that are over here. And this is like a British invasion, as you know. It's like, I don't know why there's so many of us, but there are. And so it's fun for us to do stuff that's stretching, you know, as actors.
Very good. And so that sort of leads naturally into your story, Joan. What is your background? How did you get to meet this young lady?
Well, let's see. I guess I got my professional start playing a leaf in our fall pageant in second grade. That was a big hit.
Well, then.
And, you know, the rest is history. But
share some of that history with us.
I will. I don't know. There's always something from the time I was a leaf that I just loved about everything theater, just the people doing it, the whole experience of it.
And but I really first got serious about music. I had my heart set on being a concert pianist and spent many, many, many hours in the practice room. And then I stumbled across American and British folk music, put down the piano, started playing the banjo, and all other kinds of folk music for years and years and years and years. And I've lived in a lot of different towns. While I was living in Minneapolis, where it was very cold all the time, I decided, I was acting, and I decided I needed to do some movement work. So I took a month-long winter workshop at a modern dance studio, fell in love with it, didn't do anything except dance for about 10 years, and got danced with a number of companies. And so I started becoming a triple threat with movement and music and acting. And then when I was living in Atlanta, I had a chance, was given a chance to direct for the first time. And I just went wild because it I was able to synthesize all of these things that I'd learned from some really wonderful teachers. And then I was living in Manhattan, working in Manhattan, and our good friend John Stevens asked me, who is the artistic director of Theatre Gale that just did mostly Irish and Welsh plays, to come down and direct Under Milkwood. And this wonderful woman walked into audition, and I thought to myself, oh, please be a good actor. Please, please be a good actor. And she was a wonderful actor.
I think we've all had some of those days.
Right.
But you were very well behaved. You always say that.
I was. But the night the show closed, I pounced.
Oh.
like a jaguar. And the rest is history. But we can't tell you that part.
Well, we had a little pre-discussion and decided we wouldn't talk about that.
So we would just allude to it. Wink and nod.
Our audience is maybe interested, but I think maybe since it's also a kids' program, we probably want to only talk about it in subtleties if we do.
Done.
Under Milkwood, that's a show that I've been involved with twice here in Albuquerque. Once very early in the 80s at the Vortex, and then once again when Paul Ford directed it. It's got some amazingly wonderful characters in it. And so what characters did you play or characters?
Oh, my God. It was a long time ago, of course. So
yes.
Polly Garter.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Who was that? The Welsh one who ate fish.
Oh, that's right.
Mrs. Cherry Owens.
Mrs. Cherry Owens.
Cherry Owens.
And that one with the weird twitch in her eye.
That one was Colleen McClure.
I can't remember. It was. You're talking like 18, 19 years ago.
But I got to tell you that.
Is that all?
Yeah. With the scene with Cherry Owen and his wife, they're eating food, and she sort of channeled a pelican or some sort of seabird while she was talking and eating. I could see the fish going down her throat. It was hilarious.
It is such a fun show because I may have done a couple of the characters twice. I don't recall, but there are so many different interpretations of that show and the way that people interpret those characters that just makes it such a fun actor challenge. It's an important piece of literature, of course, but in terms of being something for the actors, it's really, really a strong piece.
Mm-hmm.
And for the directors, one of the really amazingly wonderful collaborative pieces.
Yes, it definitely is an ensemble piece. You have to work very, very closely together, the actors and the director.
And the language is so wonderful.
It is.
It's beautiful.
It just is wonderful to speak, wonderful to hear.
Mm-hmm. The poetry of it is just knocks me out every time I see it or participate with it. So from there, moving forward to today, you've come to Albuquerque and you are now a writer, a director, a little of this and a little of that.
Yeah, rake a lot of leaves, too.
Well,
that's what happens when you live in Corrales.
right. Well, she was saying that we met in the show and she had single mom with three kids, and I was a 46-year-old bachelor, never been married. And I said, I don't think we can afford to live in Manhattan. And she said, I don't want to stay in Atlanta. And so I said, I know this little place called Corrales, because my family moved out here about 1970. So we're very deliberate people. We move slowly. We think things through. So we flew out here together one weekend and bought a house like that.
We said, oh, we're just looking.
Yeah.
And then we fell in love with the place that we're living in now. So.
Right. Yeah. And I've done a lot of work in Albuquerque, working just about every theater in town and such. But I kind of stopped directing for a while. Colleen was the head of performing arts at Bosky School for a number of years. She built the drama program there and expanded the department. And she gave me the opportunity, foolishly in some cases, to write plays for her students. And I found that I just loved it. I mean, any adult that listens to anything I have to say really is in trouble already. but kids are, they're just so open and enthusiastic, and they're willing to try almost anything.
Yeah, I kept complaining because there are not very many decent plays for young people, as far as I'm concerned. And he always wrote such amazing plays for my students. They just loved them, you know, really loved them.
Really wanted them to, you know, have a chance to stretch and act things that they wouldn't typically do. So
you did lots of work with Triclock Theatre Company, mm-hmm. Joe Paracchio,
right? And, long time ago.
Long,
yeah,
time
when they
ago.
Were when they were Riverside.
When they were still Riverside.
Became
that's right.
Triclock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did Seagull with them back in those days.
I saw that production.
Did you?
Yeah, that was done by what was his name?
That's Leo Shapiro.
Leo Shapiro, thank you very much.
Yep.
We had a strange connection there because this guy, we were just talking about John Stevens, who was the AD for Theatre Gale in Atlanta, was best buddies with Leo. And John and I were best buddies. And Joe somehow got to know Joe Paracchio, or Pesci, or Joe Pesci, like I used to call him back then. Somehow they all confabulated together and yeah, Leo is a great, great guy. I'm sorry that he passed so early.
Well, he came to New Mexico as part of his stepping out process and somehow connected with the guys and gals at Riverside at that point. And as sort of a last hurrah, he took them and worked with them for about 6 months. Up in one of the, I don't even remember where it was now, one of the remote locations in northern New Mexico.
Vallecitos.
Yeah. And they lived up there and worked on this piece for a long time. And then Bill Derringer and I were invited in as guest artists. And we learned and fit in with the kids as best we could. We were certainly the old folks at that point. And so it was an amazing experience to learn from him, and also an amazing experience to work on that show. So that's kind of a reminiscence that maybe doesn't have anything to do with West End.
Oh, I forgot you've directed with me. You've directed me.
Did I?
So Algernon's Party.
Did I then?
Yeah.
Oh, the
so,
horse thing, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, the horse's birthday.
That was for 48 hours.
That was 48 hours, yes. Yeah. I was thinking on stage, we did the Art of Dining together.
Oh, yes.
At Fusion or at the
Cell. Yeah, that's right. That was such a fun show.
It was, and it was also a while back.
It was, a long time back.
Yeah, it was. Well, tell me about West End. Now, West End has come together sort of out of a conglomerate of things, at least my observation from the outside. You guys do things a little differently than most of the theater groups that I'm familiar with here in town. Talk about some of those differences. What makes them different for you?
I'm not sure. In some ways, yes, we don't have our own space, for one thing. Most of our plays we have done, our productions we've done at VSA North Fourth Arts, and we really love those folks there. They're just really great. we like to pull the local talent, and we like to pull in talent that's British or from the British Isles. So it's always, it's interesting. It's always quite an interesting mix. It's usually heavier on the British and then lighter on the local talent. But the idea is that we're all working together to learn something new and new material that would not necessarily have been performed here before. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, that is our mission, to really focus on British Isles. And in fact, it was going to be England, English only. But then I had people emailing me saying, you know what, with Brexit and everything else, you should really try and tie everything together, you know. And it actually, it was quite a relief, because it opened up all sorts of horizons for us with, you know, Irish and Welsh playwrights. And so, and I also have a friend in Atlanta, Joanna Daniel, and she's also, she's with Arish, which is a sort of similar production company over there, so there is talk that some of that will combine, which is really cool too, you know, that they'll come over here and do some work for us and we'll go over there. So
Atlanta, or
Atlanta, yeah,
yes, okay,
Arish in Atlanta, yeah. But this next play coming up, The Effect, even though this is, you're saying that the podcast is for young people to listen to, it is actually for mature audiences.
That's important to say.
Very, very important to say. And so wanted to put that out there. There are sexual situations and adult language. But it's a very, very profoundly moving and very interesting and fascinating play, actually. And I think, Joe, you should probably talk more about The Effect.
What is the premise? And
Well, actually, if I can, I'd like to backspace just one second.
Go right ahead.
I've always been an Anglophile, and I track this back to stuff I watched on Sunday night Walt Disney, you know, in movies like The Three Lives of Thomasina.
I remember that.
Yeah. And the little cat, was, you know, they thought he was dead. And, you know. And I think that that is probably true for most Americans in these kind of fraught times in international relations. I know that might be a bit of a risky thing to say, but people of a certain age, I think, just melt when they hear a British dialect or Irish dialect, and
with the British dialect, they seem to think that we're intelligent, that, and we're not, and we're trying to also disabuse people of that notion in our plays,
in our marriages too. Yeah. Well, but I think too, you know, you got to be practical when you have a production company, and when you're, say, I'm going to make a commitment, like Colleen did, to getting one going, and everything that entails. One practical matter is what not only distinguishes you and your flag in the theatrical landscape, but what are some of the advantages that you might naturally bring to the table? And there's so many talented actors in Albuquerque, period. And there are so many British expats who are wonderful actors, and it just seemed like a very fortuitous intersection of opportunity and personnel, and that voice.
Yeah, and so it's enriching an already incredibly rich culture of theatre and theatre community that we have here in Albuquerque. It's quite astonishing, isn't it, really, how much theatre that we have here in such a small town, yeah. Really.
There are over 30 performance groups here.
I know. It's incredible. Yeah.
Some of them, wonderful. I haven't done anything in a couple of years, but they still are reasonably active.
And right.
But I think the attrition rate is surpassed by the growth rate. There really seems to be new companies popping up every which way. And we're lucky to have a great program at UNM, which, you know, gets a lot of talented people trained and brings them into the community. That's how Riverside started.
Yep.
And other some other groups in town. So
right.
A big asset.
Yes.
It is. So talk about The Effect.
Yes.
Talk about The Effect, John.
All right. Well, it's very effective. I can tell you that. I'm stumbling a little bit because it's a very, very hard play to describe. It's written in...
Uh-oh, what's going on?
They're doing some remodeling in the other room.
Oh, okay.
Then just in case that noise...
Continues
and gets into the into the broadcast.
Should we pause?
No, we're fine.
Okay.
We're fine.
I'll try to describe it this way. The playwright, Lucy Prebble, who came to prominence in this country, I think about 10 years ago with her play Enron, all about that ill-fated company. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing for a British person to write about, mm-hmm. The collapse of an American company. But it's something of a hallmark of hers. She takes pretty much everyday stories and puts them in a setting that is extraordinary. And at some point, and I'm sure I'll talk a little bit about the writing, the language itself, and the way the plays are structured is very, very interesting. But in this case, in the effect, her subtitle for the play is A Play for Four People in Love and Sorrow. And so at heart, it's two love stories, two doctors, two middle-aged doctors, and two young people. But the frame around it is clinical drug trials. And the doctors are running a clinical drug trial for a new antidepressant. And
antidepressant, not anti.
Yes, dear. A new antidepressant.
Okay.
And so it conjures the long and dark shadow of Big Pharma all over the place. And given how in this country and other countries we're in the grip of a dreadful opioid crisis, over 60,000 yes. people gone to it in just 1 year, the play looks very candidly at the morals and the ethics involved and the vast fortunes to be made. Mm-hmm. One of the doctors has a line where the two doctors are arguing about the morals and the ethics of these trials. He says, we found Viagra through blood pressure tests. That's what they were testing for, blood pressure, reducing mm-hmm. blood pressure medication. And they discovered the side effect of that it helped with men's sex lives. And we know what a big moneymaker that's turned into. So, there's a certain amount of salivating at the prospects of what might be turned up. And so in that setting, you have these two young people who are guinea pigs. And the drug raises their dopamine levels. And over the course of 4 weeks, they get stronger and stronger doses. And they begin to think they're falling in love, but they don't know whether they really are or if this is just an effect of the drug. And so there's a lot of emotional and mental turmoil because of it. The two doctors have a history together that's been fraught and very painful, and they're kind of struggling to keep an equilibrium and perhaps see if there's a spark that might be fanned.
Don't tell the ending.
And then the butler comes at the very last page with a big butcher
knife.
The
butler did it.
Yes. So it's really like this miasma of many things happening all at once. Mm. And while I'm on this tear, I'll just also throw in that I'm sure everyone has had the experience of, say, reading a play or reading a book, and they like it, and they read it a second time. They read it a third time. Maybe not right away, but, over time, you read it over and over again and keep coming across new understandings, new awarenesses, finding new, not interpolating things into it, but just finding new things that the playwright, skillfully...
Yeah.
Created, and there's just a trove of that in this. Every rehearsal is a voyage of discovery, and it is structured in such a unusual way. The acting needs to be almost cinematic, almost uber realistic, but the action is all surreal. It's almost like a hallucination. with dislocations in time and place. Two characters will be having a conversation, and then suddenly that seems to just go away, and another conversation will be picked up in the middle between one of those actors and maybe now a third actor who is somehow, and the direct stage direction just go, the conversation is now between Connie and Dr. James, when it had been Tristan and Connie, and there's no stage direction saying somebody exits or enters. It just changes.
Uh-huh.
So it's keeping me up at nights.
A quick shout out for the incredible actors that we have in this.
Yes.
Pip Lustgarten, who is just, mm-hmm. oh my God, and Isaac.
She's a Pip.
Mm-hmm. And Isaac Christie, too. I mean, they're the volunteers in the drug trial. And they are just, the chemistry between them is just brilliant. And they are just amazing to watch their process. And then Tim Crofton as well, who's he's a local for West End Productions. He's also done work, at other theatres here in town. He's just wonderful as the Doctor, Dr. Toby, and I'm Dr. Lorna. So it's just going to be a wonderful show in terms of those actors.
Yeah,
really.
In fact, I don't think I'm giving anything away by recreating a moment that Isaac and Pip invented in the rehearsal. There's a scene where they go into this abandoned asylum that's nearby to where the testing is happening. And in the course of the conversation, they do this trick where Isaac lay down on his back and he put his feet up, his legs up, pointing towards the ceiling, and Pip lay on his foot soles. And at first they took hands, and she elevated herself to where she was now totally parallel to the ground and balancing on his straight legs. And then she lets go, and they have no contact. She's totally balanced on him, and her arms out wide like an airplane, and her face out ecstatic. It's just mind-blowing. Please don't tell the insurance company that we're doing this. If they knew. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about daredevils.
Yes, indeed.
And they're elevated above the set, or is this
oh,
from
no,
the
no,
floor?
Just, no, just elevated.
Yeah,
oh, just from the floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we're not. She's not on any ropes or anything like that.
But it's like Cirque du Soleil or something
like
that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, I was almost getting a vision of that.
Yeah.
And that would be it. So
did
this,
I tell you about the trapeze?
No, you didn't.
No, there is not one. He's lying. There is not a trapeze.
I'm being creative.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I know the answer to this because I've auditioned for you. How do you find your talent, your actors?
Well, we did start off trying to do general auditions, but that was very misleading to a lot of, actors who just didn't really know the plays, hadn't had time to read the plays, and they came and didn't really understand what the mission was because we were new. So now we are just auditioning for each play, and we can be very specific about the characters and who is required. It's lovely to see the talent here in town anyway, and so general auditions were wonderful for that, but now really, to be specific, is much fairer to actors here in terms of, knowing how old, what kind of character we're looking for. So basically, that's what we're doing now, auditioning per show. We've already auditioned for Dar, and I'd already approached Phil Shortell quite a while back, and he read for me, and he was just amazing. And so I knew that I wanted Phil Shortell as Dar, and then held auditions, I don't know if it was 6 weeks ago, something like that. And we were very fortunate. We got many actors there. One of the difficulties with Dar was that his son, Charlie, is like, he's got to be an older version and a younger version, so those two characters have to look fairly similar. Certainly the younger Charlie can't be taller because, you know, so that was tricky. But we're fully cast for that, and we've already done a read-through for that, and we'll do another one. And they've got to work very hard on their dialect because it's Northern Ireland, it's Dublin. And we do have Carla Cofola helping us with that, but they've also been... they also have a course of dialect classes that they're all working on independently.
Oh, nice.
And then they work with their script with Carla. And so that's how we're approaching the dialect. And dialect is quite important, and not in a snobby way, but if you're going to call yourself West End Productions and you're going to promote plays from the British Isles, you better be quite good at the dialects. And it can be bothersome to, because I know what it's like when I have to do an American dialect, but I'm like, please be really strict with me because I don't want to say something that's really, you know, the pronunciation's wrong, and I want to say it correctly. So, you know, really be strict with me. And I am not necessarily strict, but I do try and impress upon actors coming in. And we also have Jessica Osborne as the dialect coach.
Oh, good.
Yeah, she's great. And we impress upon them as much as we can early on before the muscle memory has taken in the memorization in a different way, so that they can work on that. And then at some point, you just have to let that go and process take over, because that's unfair, you know, for an actor to have to be constantly. But hopefully, once we've been training them, you know, and you did a dialect in for
The Iceman Cometh.
Yeah, yeah. Iceman Cometh. Yeah. And that was a very good, very good production. Some very good, strong dialects in that one.
I wasn't familiar with being that good with the dialect. But
oh, yes.
We lost a great dialect coach, and Alan did the coaching for me. And
no, yes, indeed, he was wonderful. So that's an important aspect, you know.
I might also mention too that I think for a lot of American actors, they recognize that there are dialects from the British Isles. They're not necessarily always clear about where the dialects come from, or is this kind of an invented dialect that sort of sounds like something. And sometimes in the past, when Colleen and I have been talking about this, I'll say, well, if you look at American plays, say like Streetcar Named Desire, or Desire Under the Elms, you know, you couldn't imagine doing a standard production of Streetcar without the Southern accents, and the specific ones to New Orleans. And you couldn't imagine
Death of a Salesman is New York, right?
You couldn't imagine doing Desire Under the Elms without that New England sort of thing that they do. So it's worth it, you know. It's worth it to strive for it, because it's not just getting it right for getting its right sake, but if we're about language and about words and about the melodiousness of words and the way people have organized their dialects to reflect something, whether that's conscious or unconscious about the culture they come out of, which of course is a big mirror of that selection, that slice of humanity. Then there's gold in them thar hills.
There is. The other factor is, I think, that's important here, and I want to say that I'm a fan of actors working hard as opposed to not being strict with the dialects and the accents. And is that you're building a company. If these actors are actors who you enjoy working with and who actually are
trying,
who are good actors, you want to build the company and the pool of people to draw on. And the larger that pool gets who can do the dialects, the broader the choice you have in plays that can be done.
Absolutely. And that's something that West End, you know, is consciously trying to, not with our nose in the air, trying to bring to actors here in Albuquerque that opportunity. And, yep. you know, a really fascinating thing happened in rehearsal the other night. As we were saying, Isaac's been doing just a wonderful, wonderful job. His character is from Ireland, from Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. So the other three have British dialect, and Isaac is Irish. And he's very good with dialects, and he's been working.
He worked with Steve Corona, right. actually, who's a dialect coach here in town. Yeah.
He's been working very, very hard to tune into the dialect. And the other night in rehearsal, something clicked for him. And where I could tell he was working to make the accent work, suddenly it became effortless. Mm-hmm. And then something else really interesting happened. Nice. His body became almost electrified. And has not changed. I don't mean he's walking with his hair standing up, but really the lilt of the dialect translated into an energy with his physicality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like that scene where they first come into this abandoned asylum in the moonlight, he came flying through the air from the wing, you know, like he had wings. He was, you know, way up in the air, and it was just a beautiful thing to see that energy. So that there's a great physical connection there between the you know, what you're doing with your mouth and what that can help you with your body and your whole characterization.
Mm-hmm. It has a lot to do with the confidence you have, I think,
exactly.
around
right.
being able to do that. I know in trying to learn that Irish dialect that I attempted, some say better than others, there was a strong focus. But when I got to where I thought that it could pop out naturally without having to struggle to think about it, then that relaxation that came from the confidence mm-hmm. was there. And so I think that's really an important point to
that's essential.
Talk about. The show opens when?
March 2nd.
Through to March 25th. We're open for 4 weekends. And we're doing very well, actually. I think we were concerned because it's an unknown playwright here in town, and but we're getting a lot of feedback and excitement about this particular show. We're very excited about it.
Nice. And the rest of the season is Da.
Well,
and
we have Da. I have to look at the dates because I'm terrible with dates. I'm numerically challenged. Da is May the 18th through to June the 10th. And then we have quite a little break, actually. Then we have Jim, who's doing Separate Tables, which is, oh, gosh.
It's Jim Cady.
Jim Cady. Do you know the did you ever see the movie The Years and Years and Years Ago? Wonderful.
I'm familiar with
encourage you to see that before you see the play. But anyway, so that one opens October the 5th through to the 28th. And we do 3 shows a year. Mm-hmm. So that's our season for 2018.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Really appreciate
lovely.
It. Good luck.
Being
leg.
Close
thank
quarters
you.
With you is probably kind of. I don't think people know what your little recording studio is like here, do they?
I know they don't, and they certainly don't have an opportunity to see the one where I do the lead up and the wrap up.
Yeah. I must say the martinis are delicious.
Yeah. Yeah, well, good. I'm certainly glad you like them. Again, thank you for being here. We look forward to seeing your show.
Thank you so much.
That does it for this week's show. Join us again next week when our guest will be once again Phyllis Wolf to tell us about a very funny show headed for the Jewish Community Center. The Albuquerque Theater Guild's podcast is the place where you can keep up to date on what's playing and hear special features like performance interviews and a bit of insider knowledge. If you're enjoying our programs, please like us, comment, and share with your friends on other social media platforms. Until we're together again, go see some live performance art. We'll look for you right back here next time.